Relatively Geeky presents Doom Speak. In past episodes of this fine podcast, we've covered as many as three issues at a time. Doom 2099, 19, 20, and 21. It's about a year ago. Supervillain Team-Up, 10, 11, and 12. A little over 2 years ago. Often, we cover two issues at a time. Many of the Doom 2099 episodes. Iron Man 149 and 150. The Acts of Vengeance issues of The Punisher. And of course, many times, we've looked at single issues. Most of our coverage of the 2020 Doctor Doom series, for example. The recent FF Annual 2, The Thing. But this episode, we are breaking new ground. We will be covering not three issues, not two issues, not even one issue. For today, we cover half an issue. Half of Astonishing Tales number 1, cover dated August 1970. Why only half? Because this is a Doctor Doom podcast, not a Doctor Doom and Kazar podcast. Okay? Nothing against Kazar. I have read a good amount of Kazar. I consider myself a fan of Kazar. But Kazar, you are no Doctor Doom. But before we get to the second half of Astonishing Tales number 1, let's go over some astonishing feedback. Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, said that after listening to the most recent episode of Doomspeak, all I have to say is Hail Doom. Yes, Robert. What else is there to say? And a Hail Doom to you as well, friend. And one I missed from a few episodes back, our What If episode. And I know that skipping over someone's feedback is no way to treat a knight. I hope that Sir Luke in his nobility will forgive me. Professor, just listen to the Doom Speak wherein you covered What If Dr. Doom Became the Sorcerer Supreme. Seems like a fertile area for exploration giving Victor's background in magic. I have not read this one, but your summary and review made me interested enough to check it out if I see it. What If was a series which I was always aware of as a kid, despite not reading very many of them. This is due to my brother Jason, who, though not much of a Marvel or DC fan outside of The Punisher, did enjoy What If. His reasoning was that, much like Punisher War Journal, each issue was a done-in-one and required no prior knowledge, no backstory, and no continuity that the Watcher did not tell you at the start. There is something to be said for easy-to-pick-up-and-read stories. Yes, Luke, there is. Amusingly, there is a different issue of What If Volume 2 involving Tony Stark becoming Sorcerer Supreme. While we may be on opposite sides of the Iron Man-Doom axis, it does seem that even merry old Marvel can agree that both Tony and Victor, hypothetically, make for more interesting Sorcerer Supremes than Stephen Strange, just saying. Thanks for the entertaining Doom coverage, and as always, I remain your devoted listener, Luke. Yes, Sir Luke, I think we can agree, you and I, on this power ranking that I came up with, this countdown of Marvel's top 5 Sorcerer Supremes. Number 5, Stephen Strange. Number 4, almost anyone other than Stephen Strange. Number 3, Wong. Number 2, Tony Stark. And number 1, Victor Von Doom. On the episode discussing the epic Fantastic Four Annual 2, Sean Urbanski wrote in, Professor Allen and Mr. Andy Leyland, I so much enjoyed this episode. I recall the Fantasticast coverage of this landmark issue, and it seems Andy is finally beginning to recognize Dr. Doom's love for mankind. I suspect Doom was the inspiration for the beloved father figure Captain in Cool Hand Luke. Thanks, guys. Fun episode, Sean. Thank you, Sean. And Sir Dr. And wrote in on a recent Doom 2099 episode beginning the Warren Ellis run. Interesting commentary on a tone shift with a new team. I always wonder what the discussions are beforehand. Like, did Marvel say, you know, we should make Doom more street level? Or did Ellis come in and say, I have a good pitch for Dr. Doom as a street level character? Sometimes a shift like this works. Alan Moore's Swamp Thing is now a plant, not a man. But not always. Sometimes a character is malleable to different tones. Constantine is cocky because he hides pain under Jamie Delano. And he's a right bastard under Ennis. He's linked to British myth under Jenkins. Sometimes it's a desperation ploy to save a title from cancellation. Supergirl is no longer an Earth Angel and just has powers under Peter David. But this rarely works. Anyways, intrigued to see where this goes. So am I, Doc. So am I. Appreciate your thought-out and insightful comment there. You do wonder just how these changes happen. What is that behind-the-scenes process? Because I imagine it varies from character to character, era to era, editor to editor, and new creator to new creator. And from Ranger Gord, charter member of Food, Friends of Old Doom. Ah, Professor, my apologies for the lack of summertime debriefs from the northwestern front of the Latverian frontier, which Canadian intelligence still insists on its sovereignty, despite the history of what has been clearly documented in the Alpha Flight documentaries. My summertime absence was due to a long, ponderous residence move across the province. And alas, my trucking activity was flagged by the Mounties of Von Trudeau as a convoy trucker. Gordon, that's the risk when you're not living in a free country, man. A free country. Like Latveria. Though valuable time has been lost, Gord continues, the Latverian cargoes and technology have been safely delivered and sent up to the Rocky Mountain weather control site known as Redacted, where your humble agent may once again begin the altering of the weather into damaging cold fronts that will again be transmitted via encoded signals embedded within the Prairie Justice podcast, in which earlier this year, it was revealed that the World War II ancestor of his lordship, which DC bravely referred to as Dr. Doom with an E at the end. The ruling government again thanks you for that work. The new tech will be triggered by binary code when you again pronounce the Prairie Justice podcast name in the unique tone of voice that you use. Until 2099. Hail Doom. Thank you, Ranger, and yes, your services to Latveria and your commitment to freedom has been noted. And as Greg Sanders himself would say, Hail Doom, Podna! And from Billy D, hello, Professor. Catching up on my podcast listening as I was on vacation last week at... Billy? I hate to break this to you, but where I come from? We call that an unexcused absence, buddy. So I was on vacation last week, and I don't need to listen to podcasts to keep my sanity when I'm not working for some strange reason. Okay, that one I'll allow. Anyway, always good to hear you rapping about Doomy. I'm hoping to hear more sooner rather than later, especially supervillain team-up. Thanks and take care. Thank you, Billy. We will discuss SVTU shortly and how it relates, kind of, to the half issue we're covering this episode. our last Doom Speak episode received social media plaudits from Keith G. Baker. Stop, let's team up. Freebird Comics, The Telltale Mind, Gene Hendricks, Chris Leiden 7, the WWDW RPG Podcast, Laurel, Mountain Flower 1 from the Hunters Podcast, Karen from Between the Pages, James from Karen Pat from the Longbox Crusade, Jared Albrecht, the Yard Sale Artist, Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, Vic and Phoenix, Shane Kelly, and Scott Gardner, one of the OG freaks from Two True Freaks. Thank you all. Time for a promo break, and when we return, we'll be talking about our issue, or half issue, for this episode.
I crave superheroic content. Let's see what's on.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
Nah, don't think so.
I'm Batman.
Not really what I'm looking for.
I am vengeance. I am the night. I am Batman!
Ugh, absolutely not.
This is Robin the Boy Wonder. I'm Batman.
Aha, now that's more like it.
If you see Adam West as the one true Batman, then this is the podcast for you. Tune in every other Thursday on your favorite podcast source to hear Tim and Paul discuss the 1966 series and everything connected with it. What's the podcast called?
To the Batpoles. To the Batpoles. To the Batpoles.
And we're back. And I want to start by talking about how this title ended up here on Doomspeak. The plan, as was hinted at in the feedback section, was to dive headlong into supervillain team-up. I've already done an episode covering three issues of that run. And as I went through the Doom books that I have in my collection, I saw that I had SVTU 15, in addition to a couple of the older issues. But I flipped through 15, and I saw that it was a reprint of two issues, or half issues, of Astonishing Tales. And then I saw that I had Astonishing Tales 1 as well. So I figured, if I'm going to spend some time with Doom circa the 1970s, why not do them closer, more or less in publication order? So the plan is to go through the first five issues of Astonishing. Those are the ones that I currently have. Since those are half issues, that covers two storylines. So I will do those, working them in between the Doom 2099 episodes and any other Doom special episodes that will arise. And then maybe in a year or so, we'll jump up a few years and get back to SVTU. This first storyline in Astonishing covers issues 1 through 3, but for now, just to lay the groundwork for our coverage here on the show, we're going to look at, well, half of Astonishing Tales number 1, which had a cover price of 15 cents, 7.5 cents for each of the two stories. Oh, that comics again were 15 cents. If you follow me on Twitter, you may have gotten this message over the last year or so, but I'll say it clearly and firmly here. I hate inflation. On to the comic book, on the cover. And this is something I want to pay attention to as we cover more issues. But for issue 1, there are some serious problems I have with this. The cover is split horizontally, with Kazar on top and Dr. Doom on the bottom. Clearly a marketing mistake. But then, when you notice that Kazar is also on top of Doom in the corner box and on the title, Astonishing Tales featuring Kazar and Dr. Doom, and then when you realize that Kazar is even the first story in this book, it's almost as if there's a hashtag big comic conspiracy to favor the culturally appropriating Tarzan ripoff over the underprivileged man who rose from nothing to lead a European nation. It is so obvious what's going on here. And yet, we persevere. We will cover what should be the first half, let's be honest, first two-thirds to three-quarters of this title, but is only the back half. Now, the copy that I have, the one that I'm looking at here, I can't remember if someone sent this to me or if I got it out of a cheap bin. The condition leads me to think it was from a cheap bin. By the time I got around to this point, reading it through once, then flipping back page to page to put together a synopsis and make notes, at this point, the cover has fallen off. Actually, the cover has split down the middle and fallen off. And the center page of the comic is hanging on by one staple. But that's cool with me. I have no problem with reading copies. And I even have no problem with being the last reader of a particular, specific comic book. That's why they invented paper recycling. Now, to be fair to Kazar, who I don't hate, let me give a one-sentence summary of that story, because it's not bad. Zabu is captured by Kraven the Hunter, and Kazar ain't happy about that. And now, with our opening act out of the way, let's get to the headliner. Because that is why we're here. We are here. For unto you is born the Doomsman. Written by Roy Thomas with art by Wally Wood. Shoutouts to the Marvel Wiki and the website comicsarchaeology.com for help with the synopsis and also for providing context for this title. We start with Doom standing before a huge screen showing the lunar surface onto which American astronauts have just landed again. Or as Doom puts it, once more, the foolhardy Americans have landed one of their primitive rockets on the surface of the moon. Let them bask while they may in the glow of their own self-esteem. Soon, they will have a rude awakening and know that they are living in the era of Dr. Doom. Yeah, that's right, Victor. You tell them. On the moon, Buzz and Neil locate a perfectly round sphere. This oversized marble may be our first proof of visitors from another star. Now look, I know that astronaut training is a very long, difficult, thorough, time-consuming process. But U.S. astronauts in 1970 have not heard of, I don't know, Galactus? The Kree, Skrulls, those events weren't proof positive of visitors from another star? Come on, Neil. Buzz, you are not coming off looking all that good so far in this story. That sphere is taken to Washington, and as the president handles it, it turns on. And a recorded message from Doom appears on the sphere, mocking the state's pathetic rocket technology over his teleportation abilities. Today, I make no demands, no threats, but one day, I shall voice demands, and all shall obey them. Farewell, for now. You have to give Doom credit here. Because an underrated character trait of any leader, any person really, is patience. There's no telling how long ago Doom transported that sphere to the moon, but all this time he, or probably an underling, that is what interns are for, someone has been waiting for it to activate, to put the next part of the plan in motion. Patience, my friends, that's what that is. Patience. We turn to the storybook kingdom of Latveria, nestled high in the Bavarian Alps. And all its deadly superiority is the handiwork of one man, he who even now strides the stone ramparts. He has moved on to his next project, creating the perfect weapon a living being he dubs the Doomsman. Soon this creature will walk and talk and conquer. But he has been created in my image with my brain pattern. Thus, he can never betray me. I believe that is what narrative professionals, writing experts, refer to as foreshadowing. Now, meanwhile, in the forgotten catacombs beneath the kingdom, Doom is unaware that deposed former leader, Prince Rodolfo, is organizing an army to oust Doom as leader of the country. It just sounds silly even saying it. Part of his plan is to distract Doom with a woman named Ramona, who is a dead ringer for Doom's childhood love, Valeria. And she knows what she must do. A Doombot responds to an accident and finds Ramona, who has ID identifying her as Valeria. She's brought to the throne room, and Doom responds to her appearance. It is her face, name. Yet is she truly the one I've sought so long? I want to believe so, but I must take care. And since this is a 10-page story from more than 50 years ago, in just two panels, not two miniseries, not two issues, in two panels, Doom has used his hypnoprobe on her and learns the truth. But in a cross within a double cross, that, in fact, plays into part of Rodolfo's plan. Doom knows she is a spy, but because of her face, he will not quickly destroy her. Because he is such a loving man, a true romantic at heart, Doom does become smitten by this woman and decides to take her as consort due to her resemblance to Valeria, playing right into Rodolfo's plan. Victor even reveals to her his true face, except it's not really his true face because he used an illusion to hide his scars, making her fall for him. But truly, gentlemen, who among us has not done that? But he flees from her, refusing to live a lie, allowing his true nobility to shine forth. He heads right into his man cave. Truly, gentlemen, who among us has not done that? To continue work on his Doomsman. This time, he manipulates his ring to truly remove his mask, which was something me and Andy Leyland talked about when we did Doom's Origin a few months back. We wondered how often, you know, for how long did that ring being connected to the mask in terms of the process for removing the mask, how long did that remain? And I guess it remained through at least 1970. Doom transfers a copy of his mind into the Doomsman. First, this one shall have my brain. Then an army to conquer a planet I am destined to rule. Reasonable goal, actually, and I think a viable strategy to accomplish that. Plan your work, Victor. Work your plan. Ramona walks in on Doom and sees, to her disgust, I guess both his scarred face and the Doomsman, calling him a grotesque monster, creating another monster. Dames. Am I right? She starts trashing all of the cool stuff in his man cave, in his laboratory. I mean, come on, gentlemen. We have all been here before, right? And just then, almost like it was a plan, Rodolfo and his men attack Doom's castle. His men manage to get through the first lines of defense pretty easily. Only Doom himself now stands between Rodolfo and total victory. During the carnage, the Doomsman gets a few extra doses of cosmic ray energy because Doom had to fight the battle. And the Doomsman ends up activating himself, bursting through the castle, heading off property, lost in the darkness and gloom. And Doom surprises the upstart Rodolfo, who then finds himself surrounded by Dooms. Projected images, actually. But by the time he figures out which is which, his men have fallen at his feet. So when Rodolfo does find the one that is not a hologram, he blows away the only real physical Doom there. But it's a Doom bot. Sorry, sucker. Too bad. So sad. Doom reveals to the pitiable wretch that he decided to allow him to strike, the better to clip his fangs. Hashtag genius strategy alert. The girl was a clever ruse, he admits, but she won you merely a battle, not the war. But Rodolfo and Ramona cannot answer Doom, for already his oral hypnoprobe holds them under sway. But in the last few panels of the issue, Doom thought bubbles that he wishes that he were as confident as he sounds. To be fair, I think all of us wish we felt as confident as Doom sounds. For my Doomsman, instead of coming to my aid, went its own way during the attack. Noting that the creature has Doom's own mind, he wonders, I may have created my most formidable enemy of all. The story is continued next issue, and our coverage will be continued in a few episodes, I suppose. I went over some of my notes and comments as I did the synopsis, but I guess I do have a few more things to say. First, this is such a common comment, not just from me, but from many other commentators. But if this were being made today, this 10-page story would be at an absolute minimum issues 1 and 2 of a 6-issue storyline. Now mostly, and again I hinted at this, his revealing of his face to the girl, then his fleeing from her as we learned that it was all an illusion. That is 3 panels across the top of 1 page. That dramatic storyline covered almost 1/3 of a page. And no, I'm not a fan of modern decompressed storytelling, of course. But man, you can certainly see why the pendulum would swing that direction. That correction was an overcorrection, yes. A massive overcorrection. But with stories like this, where potentially powerful moments, intriguing subplots, are just blown past. You can see where the impulse comes from to slow things down, to open things up, to decompress. But that's the problem with any pendulum. It never stops right where you'd like it to. It just keeps swinging from side to side. But aside from that very particular criticism based more on the era of the story than anything else, and the silly bits that I did point out, there's not a lot of negative commentary to make on this. Except for the Doomsman, especially the name, especially the sound of the name, because the temptation, at least for this humble podcaster, is to hit the first syllable, to make it rhyme with groomsman. But doomsman sounds too much like a plural, and there is, at least at this point in time, only one doomsman. And to say that clearly with the man, you have to really hit that last syllable hard, doomsman. And it just sounds awkward, silly. And that may be why, spoilers, this fella never really caught on. As worried as Doom is at the end of the story, as scared as he is of the Doomsman, you'd think that Roy Thomas was really, really trying to come up with a legit adversary for Doom. But, well, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. In a few episodes, we'll knock out this storyline but let's just recognize that the toy aisles are not overrun with Doomsman pop vinyls. But you do understand the impulse to make an adversary for Doom, to make an adversary equal to Doom, and maybe only a being that he has created with his own brain, mind, imprints would qualify. So let's give Roy credit for one important thing here. Although this is not a key collector issue, it is significant in being the first Doom solo story. And very intentionally, I imagine, the Doom story does one thing that you might not expect, but which is critical in a great Doom story, and that is the complete lack of Richards's. And at this point, that was a really bold move to tell a Doom story without any mention of or even reference to the family of four failures. Again, the FF is not even mentioned once. Good on ya, Marvel, circa 1970. Now, as an aside, I did mention that this may not be considered a key collector issue, but I have heard a rumor that Kevin Feige is preparing to announce his plans for Lucky Phase 13 of the MCU. And it's under wraps, it's unofficial, but my contacts tell me that the movie Doctor Doom 5, scheduled at this point for release on July 41st, 2030Q, some things will have changed by then, I'm sure, but the rumored subtitle for that film, Doctor Doom 5, is Doomsman Rising. So I'm not saying go slab your copies of this issue, but I'm not saying to don't not forego slabbing your copies. You understand what I'm saying there? Speaking of this issue again, in terms of the art, Wally Wood is obviously a comic legend. And although his art style here is a bit on the simplistic side, he gets the moody and shadowy bits of Castle Doom and Doctor Doom right on. The space stuff at the start is cool, and between that and the Latverian setting, he gets the comic book fantasy vibe very well. And every artist has their own take on how to portray Doom's emotions behind the mask, to show Doom's eyes behind the mask. And Wood does a nice job portraying a depth of emotions on Doom's face. And since you only see such a little teeny tiny bit of his face, handling the eyes well is almost as important a task for a Doom artist as handling the cloak well. So overall, very enjoyable read. Glad we started out our 70s excursion with this issue, with this series. Of all the ways that the first Doom solo series, co-heading a title, of all the ways that that could go, I think this one went very well. Looking back from 5 decades in the future from when this issue came out, I think we have to say job well done. Now, I'm not quite sure when we'll be getting back to Doomspeak. Shouldn't be long, but I don't know exactly when. I hope you all listened to the recent Quarterman 188, which came out a few days before Christmas, an episode which started with a special guest, everybody's favorite podcaster from this network, M. On that episode, it was revealed that they had given me the 1,300-page Doctor Doom Omnibus, The Book of Doom, for my birthday. Fear not, an employee discount was involved. That volume contains every significant Doctor Doom appearance, and along with my complete collection of Doom 2099, with perhaps a very few exceptions, those will form the basis for Doomspeak for quite some time. Between that big old thick omnibus and a few issues that I have here, that gives me the first 8 issues of Astonishing. I mean, at least the important parts of those issues, you know, the Doom stuff. So we are going to be spending a lot of time here this year in the 1970s in this title. So we will be getting to the rest of this storyline soon, finishing it up, but not next time. Remember, we're going to be continuing our pattern of bouncing back and forth, which means, my friends of old Doom, that next time, next month probably, we are going back to the future for Doom 2099 issues 28 and 29. If you have any feedback on this episode, on this issue, Astonishing Tales, or anything related to The Good Doctor, don't hesitate to contact me. You can do that via email at relativelygeeky@gmail.com or as a comment on our Facebook or blog post for the episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. Thank you all for listening. It is highly appreciated. Take care and hail Doom.
Hail Doom! Hail Doom. Hail Doom.